The 2021 NCAA Division I Men's and Women's Lacrosse Championships are right around the corner. Share the experience with lacrosse fans from across the country and witness the top teams in the nation compete for a national championship. The 2021 NCAA Division I Men's Lacrosse Championships will be hosted by Fairfield University in East Hartford, Connecticut. The 2021 NCAA Division I Women's Lacrosse Championships will be hosted by Towson University in Towson, Maryland. Tickets are still available for both championships. Visit ncaa.com/tickets for more information and to secure your championship experience today. Welcome to the New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, presented by the 2021 NCAA Division I Men's and Women's Lacrosse Championships. Share the experience with lacrosse fans from across the country and witness the top teams in the nation compete for a national championship. Tickets are still available. Visit ncaa.com/tickets for more information and to secure your championship experience today.
All right. Thank you for joining us on New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal. I'm here with Jack Piatelli. I'm New England Lacrosse Journal editor Mike Z. And Jack, it's hard to believe that we are at this point. We are on the eve of NCAA Championship Lacrosse Weekend. A few months ago, we didn't know if we were ever going to get here. And here it is, and it's upon us.
Truly amazing. You know, a lot of doubters out there that we wouldn't have a season, never mind a championship. We didn't know if we were having an NCAA Championships for Division I, II, and III. Men's and women's. Men's championship is in Connecticut, University of Connecticut. It's one of the best family events I've attended with my family, and just a great overall experience. They have the best players playing over the weekend, and a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, and let's break it down. We're going to talk about all these levels and all these championships later in the show, but what we have basically referred to it at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, Connecticut, are the Division I men's semifinals on Saturday. Number 1 North Carolina will take on number 4 Virginia at noon, followed by number 2 Duke taking on number 3 Maryland. That championship game will be played on Monday, Memorial Day. Also, as part of the weekend, the Division 2 and 3 men's championships will be played Sunday. It's Lemoyne versus Lenoir Rhine on Sunday at 1 p.m. for the D2 title, and then RIT takes on Salisbury at 4 p.m. Sunday for the D3 title. Also, we're going to talk about the Division I Women's Championships, which are being held in Maryland Friday and Sunday. Boston College is part of that field. They'll take on number 1 North Carolina on Friday at noon. And Kelly Amonte and Northwestern, in a spot in the semifinals, they will play Syracuse in the late semifinal. We're going to be joined on the show today by Kyle Devitt, staff writer, New England Lacrosse Journal, laxjournal.com, guy who follows the sport intently, has written a ton for us, knows it inside and out, knows the teams, knows the strategies. We should have a great conversation with him.
Not only that, Kyle brings studies to players and follows their careers, so he'll give us some great insight on local players who will be playing in the NCAA championships this weekend.
Yeah. And let's talk about the venue, Jack. I mean, we talked about this a little bit. Rentschler Field, outside of Hartford, 40,000 capacity. You've seen this event in big stadiums, smaller stadiums. What's your take on the setting for this weekend's big games?
I'm told they've sold 19,000 tickets. So I'm excited that 19,000 fans will be in attendance. I do like the smaller stadiums. Gillette was fun to see it live at Gillette Stadium. They had 35,000-40,000 people, which is fantastic. But back when they had it at Rutgers or Brown University, it's a packed audience and fans are right on the field. You can see everything that's going on and hear the plays on the field. I think it just brings the fans closer to the game, and it's just a better experience.
Having fans at any sport, at any level, brings an element that we have missed so much over the last year. You see it, you know, at Fenway Park. I see it watching Premier League soccer now that fans are being allowed back in stadiums. Everyone's got their favorite sports, and those sports across the board are made better by fan presence.
Yeah, and this year the fans are going to guarantee they're going to go crazy because, number one, they're going to be at one of the best sporting events in the nation, the lacrosse championships, but they're going to be outside and they're going to be watching it live, you know, so it's going to really be a great opportunity for parents, boys, girls to get outside and watch the best players in America compete for a national championship.
Got all kinds of NCAA championship lacrosse talk coming up with Jack Piattelli and myself and our guest Kyle Devitt on New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
All right, welcome back to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast here with Jack Piattelli and Kyle Devitt, our two resident in-house experts, ready to deliver some thoughts on the upcoming championship weekend. It's the first NCAA championship weekend we've had in 2 years. Ton of excitement, both for players, for fans, for followers. Jack, pretty good stuff.
Yeah, we're going to see some great lacrosse in Connecticut, and for New England fans, an opportunity to watch these players play live. A lot of local players playing, a chance for their family and friends to come and watch. Nothing like going to the lacrosse championships live. As a family, we went 10 years in a row. It's not only a great event, great lacrosse, but it's one of the best family events to attend in the country.
Kyle, you've seen a ton of these. You know, what stands out for you when we arrive at this time of year for college lacrosse?
I mean, being able to watch it without having it for a year is so different. You know, I didn't realize how much I missed it until we were getting ready. We're like talking about teams that are ready to play and players and matchups. And I kind of just had to stop and go, oh, this is what it felt like, you know, to get to that championship level, to have played all these games, and now we're finally here, and it's a thing that we didn't think we'd have again, maybe. You know, the possibility of not playing was always hanging, right? Or even with Loyola getting a false positive test and having to pull out of the Patriot League game, championship game against Lehigh, and then still getting in, upsetting Denver, and then, you know, almost beating Duke, getting into overtime.
And you bring up a good point, Kyle, is the challenges that all these programs had to go through to get to where they are this weekend is really incredible. And hats off to the coaches and the players for not only winning the games they get here, but having to go through all the protocols to get to the Final Four championship.
Yeah, absolutely. Sacrifices on and off the field, and we've seen those, and we've seen those stories all season long. And here we are. I mean, and let's start in Division I with the men's semifinals and finals. Again, it's North Carolina versus Virginia on Saturday at noon, to be followed by Duke versus Maryland at 2:30. The winners will meet on Memorial Day Monday for the Division I national championship. It's the four top seeds. Guys, it's, you know, the blue bloods of college lacrosse, the ACC, Big Ten, four great programs. What are your thoughts on that, guys? Do you like it when the chalk picks go forward, or sometimes as a follower, is it more fun when someone crashes the party?
Well, when these four teams match up, there's a lot of unknowns. Number one, you're going to see some great lacrosse, right? It's the best players in the country. All four coaches have won a national championship as coaches. So you're going to see some great lacrosse. I love the underdog. Love to see, you know, new and upcoming programs participate in the Final Four championship, if they're worthy. But no complaints on my end, because you are going to see the best four teams in the country play, and you're going to see some great lacrosse, and it's going to come down to probably the last shot, like it did in the quarters. Three of the games went into overtime.
Yeah, it's going to be an incredible weekend, but I think there is an element of, man, what if Loyola won? You know, like, oh, what if Rutgers won? You know, I think that would have really shaken things up and gotten maybe not more people involved in it, because the bigger the team, the bigger the audience, right? The more like national presence the teams are or have, the more eyeballs are going to go to the game naturally. But I do think it will be fun. But also, I am not surprised whatsoever, having watched all four of these teams, that they're in the Final Four at all.
Right. And you look at Rutgers, Brian Breck, and it's like, what do I have to do to get the next, you know, the next step? You know, I take overtime, and they had possession against North Carolina, and they lost the ball. And, you know, and unfortunately, North Carolina for Rutgers, they lose in overtime. Three overtime games, to your point, it could have been Rutgers. Yeah. It could have been Loyola because they got two overtime.
Yeah. It was just an incredible experience watching the games, too, and knowing that these are games that, again, I keep harping on this point, that we didn't get. These are the games that we're thinking of, dreaming of, and working towards. And you, the other thing about these teams is they're kind of, all of them have kind of a super team feel to them in terms of their personnel, right? The graduate students that they've picked up, the guys that they have retained with that extra year of eligibility, guys like Dox Akin coming back for Virginia, Charlie Bertrand transferring in. I mean, that's incredible. The firepower of these four teams is so impressive. It's really at a pro level. I mean, there's like pros all over all of these teams at pretty much every position.
Yeah, because a number of these players, to your point, would be playing in the PLL this summer if we didn't have the exemption for an extra year. Look at Sowers. He would be in the PLL.
Yep.
And you take a look at chemistry, to your point, like, great teams win championships, right? You have to be a great teammate. And to add a lot of additions, look like a Manown from LaSalle had a great four-year starter at Duke, and Sowers comes in and he loses his starting position, but he's been a great teammate. He's happy to be in the championship Final Four and have an opportunity to win a national championship. So you got to give the coaches and the players a lot of credit for all the additions. They still created a culture, a great team environment, because the ultimate goal was to get to be one of the Final Four teams.
Yeah, yeah. Great point. And you've touched on it, and one of the things that we see every year at this time, or at least in normal years, is we see the national powers competing for a national championship, but we see players from Massachusetts, players from New England, making big impacts on those teams and helping drive those teams to where they are right now. You know, all four teams in Hartford, you know, have that New England influence, and we can talk about some of those players. And start with North Carolina. First game of the day, Connor McCarthy, Lincoln Sudbury, game-winning goal in OT.
Yep. And a incredible one at that. Any OT winner is incredible, but just the way that, I mean, he's like falling down and he gets it to drop. I mean, it was something that North Carolina's done multiple times, right? Like, you're not surprised by the fact that they won, or how they won, just that it was such an incredible game, and all these games were incredible, and I totally expect the exact same thing to happen in Hartford. I've watched Will Bowen play for a long time. He's an incredible defender. His extra year of development, I think, has really helped him. This offseason, he is a better player than I think people understand. His ability to handle the ball is much better. His ability to slide and recognize and switch and navigate picks makes him a first-teamer for me.
Yeah, when he was at BC High, I believe he was Massachusetts Player of the Year. I mean, he was always a big, athletic, strong kid. But, Kyle, to your point, his skill development, his lacrosse IQ has really gone, you know, a couple of levels above and beyond where he was at BC High.
100%.
Who are some of the other guys from the region that really stand out to you guys looking forward to these games?
Tucci, I mean, you look at face-offs or possessions are so important. It's going to come down to possessions, goaltending, turnovers. So he's done an incredible job, played for the Tomahawks, for North Carolina. And it's just great to see, like you said, these local kids not only – getting to that level, but making a difference and contributing at the highest level possible.
Yeah, I'm going to give a nickname to Tucci. I'm going to call him the Collector. given that we wrote I wrote an article about him and found out that he flips vintage toys and comics and things like that. He just watched an episode of American Pickers and was like, I think I can do that. And he like does it. It's like his hobby. So the collector, he also collects Faceoff wins. So we're going to give him that nickname.
Yeah, that's great. And this reminder that you can read about all these players that we've covered over the years at laxjournal.com, including the piece that Kyle had on Zach Tucci late last week. That was a very interesting insight and look into some of his off-the-field activities. Eric Holden, guys, Maryland, here's a guy I talked to last year. He had wrapped up at Hobart and thought he was done, and all of a sudden, pandemic, he's got another year of eligibility, but he needs to go somewhere where he can find a graduate program, you know, of studies that Hobart didn't offer. He ends up at Maryland, a program it's everybody knows about, and while he's not, you know, been a starting attack, he's had some injuries, and the obviously a lot of talent right there. He's found ways to contribute. Coach Tillman loves him down there, scored a huge goal in the Big Ten championship game. Another guy we'll be watching.
Yeah, another Lincoln Sudbury guy, too. So a shout-out to Brian Vaughn of the program that he's developed at Lincoln Sudbury. A great culture there as well. And I think, you know, it all comes down to these kids. They get to a certain point in their career, and Holden's a perfect example. It's not about him. It's about the team, and it's about getting to the Final Four and have an opportunity to win a national championship. I mean, the ultimate goal for every lacrosse player is to win the national championship. I personally think winning a national championship at the college level today is more important, or I think is a greater feat than winning a professional championship.
Yeah. And to win a championship, you first got to win the semifinal. So let's take a closer look at both of these semifinals and get some thoughts, guys. North Carolina, Virginia. Kyle, quick take.
Man, I hate doing picks. We didn't talk about this before, but I hate picking games.
What are we looking for?
I really love both of these offenses. That for me, it's an offensive showcase. But the defenses, guys like Kyle Kaloji for UVA, Cade Saucedd, Jared Connors, are actually really fun to watch in the open field as long poles. For Virginia and for UNC, Virginia poles get up and down. The UNC poles don't cross the midfield as much, right? So you're going to see a lot more transition. Virginia has this great ride, by the way. North Carolina also has a great ride. So I think watching the clearing game and how the poles are going to be utilizing that is something that's very interesting to me. But then, obviously, you have, again, so much firepower, so many weapons. You could literally list all of the starters on all these teams, and there are guys with 20 goals here, 20 goals there, like 15 assists here, 40 assists here. There's no way to match up against either one of these teams in the 6-on-6. So the most exciting part of any game for me is what happens on the break, right? Defensively, offensively. In my mind, as a coach and a player, I'm always like, well, you should score on every fast break, right? Doesn't happen. But in my brain, I'm like, fast break, goal, let's go, let's go, let's go. And even when I coach, I scream, put it on them. Every time we have a break, it doesn't matter. If it's I don't even care. Every break is a fast break to me. So I think that's the most interesting aspect of this game in particular is, and where I think it'll be won, is in the fast break execution of both teams.
I agree, and I agree. Coach Lars Tiffany and Joe Bresci, I think they know going into the game, the advantage is going to be the transitional game. The two-on-ones, the three-on-twos, the fast breaks, who can get the ball off the ground as quick as possible, get it upfield, you know, and get the shots on goal. Your point, you know, we expect them to score every single time on a fast break, mm-hmm. but they're looking for get as many opportunity shots, and that's going to be 6-on-6. They're pretty even.
Yeah,
it's going to come down to goaltending, obviously, on those transition situations, and getting the ball. What team can get the ball up the field faster than the other team, and how many times they can do it?
Yeah, and both these goalies are. I'll say it. I think they're both mercurial. I think they could go either way, either like any day. Road or Krieg. You know, Krieg is young. He's great stick side, excellent. And then Road goes up and down. He has games where he is an absolute world beater. And then he has a game where he lets five in five hole. And you're like, how did that happen? So it's very unpredictable. That's the unpredictable thing. That's totally right to hit on that, because the execution of the goaltenders, I think, is also going to be key, especially in this matchup. Not so much in the other matchup to me. I think this is that's where you look at the very specialized nature of that position.
And looking at the Georgetown, Virginia game, I didn't expect a score like that based on how Georgetown was playing this year and the win they had in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So what Virginia did to Georgetown and how they slowed their offense down was very impressive. So if they can do the same thing against North Carolina, they'll have a lot of success. So whether they can or not, I don't know. But like to your point, what I love about the shot clock now is riding is back.
Yes.
And because riding is back, North Carolina won that game against Rutgers because they had a turnover on the ride.
Yep.
And I just love the fast pace, 20 seconds get over midfield, you know, and if you get it over in 10, you get 7 to get the shot off. It's just a faster game, and riding is a big part of the game. I remember talking to Mikey Powell back in the day. He said his favorite part about playing the attack position is riding.
Yeah.
Gives you an opportunity to get back to the defenseman, get a turnover, and it's always either a 2-on-1, 5-on-4, 4-on-3, an opportunity to get a good shot on cage, and it might be the winning goal.
Yeah, I have a bad reputation for I still play, and I play like kind of old man ball, and I have a bad reputation for being the angry riding attackman, but I get my team points because all I do is ride. I can't do much else, but I do chase the ball well.
There we go.
I'm like a retriever.
Second semifinal, we got Duke and Maryland in this year of super teams. Duke came into the season as the super team, according to many reports. What do we look for in this one?
Pretty much the same thing as the first one. So much talent. And, you know, you've got transfers, graduates, students at both schools. And, I mean, Sowers at Duke had a great career at Princeton, and he's been a great addition for Duke. So, again, it's going to come down to defensive play, goaltending. Going to have a good matchup at the faceoff circle. Transition, both teams like to play fast, and they like to push the ball up the field. And they like to get the ball over the field within 10 seconds, even though they have 20. And, again, it's going to come down to quality shots, good goaltending, and coaching, timeouts. But it's going to be very exciting to watch.
I learned many years ago to never bet against John Tillman. He is the most prepared coach in Division I. He always has a game plan. If you watch all these coaches on the sideline, he's also one of the only ones that always has like the iPad, like he's an NFL coach. He's got the Belichick plan ready. If this happens, then we do this. If this happens, then we do this. He's always prepared. And with Duke, it's actually the opposite. I don't mean that as a slight. It's the opposite because Duke has the ability to out-talent people. And even Maryland, they could out-talent Maryland, which is crazy when you consider that Maryland has Jared Bernhardt, who is easily the most explosive offensive player in the last 2 weeks. I mean, I'm more of a Chris Gray guy myself, but Bernhardt's ability to get free and the way that Maryland moves the ball to get him into positions that are advantageous to him, dodging, scoring, or passing, is incredible. And for me, it's a great example of depth versus talent, right? Maryland is the deepest team besides maybe Virginia in this entire field, to me. Just their ability, their talent is at every single position. They have backups on backups on backups for every single occasion. And they have Tillman drawing up plays, getting them ready. They got Bobby Benson on the sideline doing their plays now, formerly of Hopkins. The way that the offense moves the ball, for me, Maryland's most influential player is the guy that gets the least amount of pub, and that's Logan Wisnauskas, right? He is incredible. Like, he is a catch, move the ball, get inside. He is a do everything off the ball player.
Yeah, you need the off ball player. I mean, they've moved the ball so well. They have a number of guys that can dodge and create the slide. And those guys that are playing off ball are so important to get those quality shots off. And back to Tillman, I think Tillman's one of the best in-game adjustments. He makes a lot of adjustments during the games. He always has the right personnel on the field, and he gives his players a lot of confidence. I think Maryland goes into every game knowing they're going to win, no matter what the circumstances are.
Right.
I mean, they can be down by three or four goals, but Tillman is an outstanding coach. Obviously, he has a lot of talent. Duke Donowski has done a great job, you know, took the program over back when things weren't very good. And his son's coaching with him. But again, it's tough to manage a lot of talent.
Right.
And have those players in the right place at the right time.
Right. Brennan O'Neill is like the, you know, he's gotten as much hype as any recruit that I can remember in recent memory for Duke. And he showed why in the Loyola game. Just they switched a shorty onto him and it was an immediate goal every time. So got to look for that.
Got a break coming up, so let's put you guys on the spot. Who wins the national championship?
Who? You go first.
Virginia.
Wow. Oh, my God. If I say Maryland, everyone I know is going to come for me.
Okay. Is there a negative?
North Carolina.
Okay. There you have it, folks. We got the picks, we got the analysis, and when we come back, we will take a look at the Division I women's semifinals. Some great New England storylines in that one. You're listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
All right, welcome back to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal. Here in studio with Jack Piatelli and Kyle Devitt as we break down a full upcoming weekend of NCAA Championship lacrosse, lacrosse that we're excited to watch. We're going to take a look at the Division I women's tournament right now that's being played down in Maryland Friday and Sunday. Semifinals on Friday, we've got number one North Carolina playing number four Boston College at noon, followed by number two Northwestern playing number three Syracuse. So two good games, some interesting stuff, and we'll keep it here. Let's start with Boston College. Kyle, this is a program in the national semifinals for the fourth year in a row. Great talent, great young talent, and a superior player in Charlotte North.
Yeah, and I'm lucky enough to have talked to Coach Walker as well for a couple other stories that I've written. But Charlotte North, so let me put this in perspective for people that maybe don't follow women's lacrosse as closely. And I'm working on it, right? I'm not an expert. But I do know this. Charlotte North has 94 goals and 177 draw controls. If you were to equate that to a men's player, you would have to take all of the points of Jared Bernhardt and all of the face-off wins of Petey LaSala or any other face-off guy that's at a top level and put them together, and you would still be very short of the total. And that is the most incredible thing that I can think of for a player in men's or women's. And that's, I actually think Charlotte North is the best lacrosse player, period, on the planet, men or women, right now, going into championship weekend.
Oh. And back in the day, your best lacrosse player on the field would take the draw or take the face-off in the men's game.
Yep.
And she's truly the best draw player in the women's game. And when she wins the draw, she dominates the offensive end of the field. And it's a wonderful thing for BC and Keisha Walker Weinstein. I mean, the possession of the women's game is in any game, but obviously you don't have the physical play in the women's game, but you can control the game so much more on the offensive end in the women's game. But the shot clock obviously has been a great addition as well to the women's game.
Yes.
And has changed it dramatically. It's made it such a better game to watch and there's more fanfare, and it's a much more physical game than it was when I was coaching at Brookline High in 1987, a long time ago. They didn't have boundaries in the girls' game. I mean, the girls' game has come so far, and it's so much fun to watch today. So if you get a chance to watch these four teams play, watch them play.
Can you remember a men's player that had anywhere close to those numbers in your life? I only have one, and he's not. It's not close, but his ability was, and it's Kyle Harrison, because he took draws at Hopkins. But I can't think of anyone else that's even close to that.
Well, in the men's game, the face-off guys just become so specialized. Yep. You know, we know what we call it, FOGO, face-off and get-off.
Yep.
And you've got some rare guys that can face-off and move the ball up the field, but they're not your top offensive player on the men's side.
Right.
I think it's refreshing to see on the women's side.
100%.
Yep. And you talk about the growth of the girls' game over the decades, and to have a program, you know, in our backyard like Boston College that has established itself as one of the top teams in the nation, that is an annual contender for an ACC championship and a national championship, you know, that's certainly helped speed the process. And then you look at our second semifinal, and this is one of the best seasons Northwestern has had in quite a few years. And, you know, Kelly Amati-Hiller, what can you say about the job she's done and the career she's had?
Yeah, I mean, she's outstanding. I mean, just her playing career. She was a four-time All-American at Maryland, two-time Player of the Year. She won two national championships at Maryland. I believe she started coaching at UMass and eventually started the program at Northwestern. And she won seven national championships. From Hingham, Mass, brother, obviously, Tony Amonte, who played in the NHL. I want to give a shout-out to her sister, Kim Amonte, who works for Piattelli Lacrosse. But great family, great athletic family. And she's going up against Syracuse, well-coached Gary Gate, who's done a fantastic job with that program. He's made it to two national championship games, hasn't quite gotten it done. Obviously, he had a career and a half. Truly believe he was the best player to ever play the game on the men's side. They know each other very well. Kelly played for Gary at Maryland for 3 years. So they know the ins and outs and how they coach, and that's the interesting part of the Division One and men's and women's is these coaches know each other so very well.
Oh, some overlap, some ties there. Yeah,
yeah, but they know how they coach. They know their tendencies. It's like tic-tac-and-toe, you know. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Syracuse is missing their best player, Megan Carney. Unfortunately, she tore her knee out against BC in April, but they made it to the Final Four without her. They're playing very well, and they're going to give Northwestern a very good test.
And also defender Grace Fahey of Syracuse from Masco, another player from the region, will be watching this this weekend. She's had a terrific career there so far. So let's swing it over to Division III, obviously. We have the Division II and III men's national championship games on Sunday in East Hartford. It's going to be Lemoyne against Lenoir-Rhyne at 1 p.m., followed by RIT versus Salisbury at 4 p.m. Hoping to see Tufts get into that game, Kyle, and they just couldn't quite do it. There's a story at laxjournal.com right now, reflecting your conversation yesterday with Casey DiNolfo and what needed to happen for Tufts to get there, but didn't quite happen.
Yeah, the most revealing thing I think that Coach DiNolfo said to me was, if the game was 62 minutes, we probably would have been able to tie it and send it to overtime. And you definitely got that feeling. They went on a two-goal run, and then, you know, turnover on the sideline, a little like ground ball scrum, gets kicked out by one of their players, and that's it. And I remember just watching it. I was stunned because going into the game, those two teams like always have great games, and it's because of the style they play, which is very up and down, very defense. What's defense? I mean, they play defense, but it's very much more focused on getting the ball off the ground, moving it up the field as quickly as possible, two or three passes and a shot. I mean, it's the most exciting brand of lacrosse I think you can play in the men's game, period. It is just so much fun to watch. If you're a young player watching all these D1 teams and then these D2 teams and D3 teams, if you're not watching Tufts and RIT, throughout the season, you're missing out because you're seeing lacrosse at a very pure offensive level where the premium is on opportunity. The premium is on not necessarily goals. Goals are great. Goals are amazing. But getting the ball up and down as fast as you can is so much fun to watch. And you know, it was ride versus ride. It was 9-9 at the half. And Tufts actually built up a lead. But, you know, RIT, give them credit. They ran their offense through different players. Larson Sundown is a total confidence player and had all the confidence in the world with 5 goals the game before and came in again and had a really good performance against Finn McTiernan, who played as hard as he could. Those two guys battled the entire game. But, you know, eventually just Tufts kind of came up short. And the other thing D'Onofrio said was this was only their 10th game of the year.
Yep.
At this point of the season, usually it's 22, right? So he was kind of making the, you know, case that they're basically in mid-season form, not playoff form, which is because the NESCAC kind of dragged their feet in making the decision to have a season. And they couldn't even get in the weight room till March.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know, and then they got this far. I mean, you know, you have to give, you know, take your hat off and give them credit for that.
And I think it was difficult. They had to go to Rochester, and it's unusual to have to play back-to-back games, right? They played Saturday, then they played Sunday. Rochester didn't have to travel. So I thought watching the game that they just ran out of gas. They were up 3-0 early, got a, you know, a good start, but they didn't have a strong finish, to your point.
Yeah.
But the goaltending was very good for RIT.
Yep.
And their attack was strong. Dawson had 5 goals, and Quinn, what do you have, 4 goals and 1 assist? So 2 players to watch in the championship game. And, again, they're going up against Salisbury, who plays a very similar game, won a number of championships. We've watched them play, seems like, so many times.
Every weekend.
That's going to be a fun game to watch as well.
Yeah,
you guys touched on the NESCAC, obviously, and I think we all agree dragging their feet is the operative phrase there. They made some decisions late that cost some teams and programs a chance to play lacrosse this season. Several teams opting out of season, including the Middlebury women, the national champions in 2019. In Tufts, men's and women's teams seem to be, you know, 2 teams that really wanted to go all in as much as possible when they were given the green light to finally play. The men reaching the semifinals, the women coming within 1 goal of a national championship after a really, really tough defeat on Sunday.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. And I talked to Coach Shute of Tufts. And, you know, I think that her demeanor after the game was very accepting, right? The way that you can kind of rationalize it, again, is very similar to the men where they only had 11 games, you know? So it's one of those things where they had to play this whole NESCAC schedule. It was a little different for the women than it was for the men. But in the end, they just came 1 goal short. I mean, one of my favorite players, I've watched a couple of their games. I watched their NESCAC championship victory over Wesleyan. And Catherine Lawless is awesome. Like her, she's just... like she glides, right? There are players that you watch where you're like, how do you get from there to there so quickly? And she's one of those, like, some with little guys especially, like Chris Gray, he just runs and he's got like legs just powering him, and you can just see how he gets to places. But a player like Lawless, she is at one side of the field and then she's at the other, and she's going east, west, north, south, doesn't matter. Catch and shoot, you know, the ability to score in free position is there. You know, she had 4 goals and 2 assists in the final. Did everything she could, but, you know, they just came up a little bit short. And that Salisbury team, by the way, totally loaded, that women's team. So, you know, not a shocking thing to see them kind of drop there, but, you know, an accomplishment in and of itself to get to the championship game.
And this has not been, you know, a traditional lacrosse, college lacrosse season, the way we measure them, the way that, you know, up until 2020, we were used to having them, the start times, the matchups going into league play, the conference championships, and then the national tournament. It was a season. Unfortunately, it wasn't a season for programs in the Ivy League, for some programs in the NESCAC, but there was a lot of college lacrosse to digest. And I want to ask you guys, you know, looking back on it with just 1 weekend to go, what are some of the biggest takeaways from this season that you guys saw, either teams or styles of play or trends, anything like that? I'll throw it out there.
I mean, for me, I can't believe it's almost over. It went by really quickly, and I didn't anticipate that. I thought I was kind of going to be able to have my meal and savor every bite, and I don't think I got to do that. But the fact that I had it there was so rewarding, and I got so much out of it just watching these great games. There was a great D1 game every week. There was a great D3 game every week. There wasn't a great D2 game every week. I'm going to be honest with you. But there was one every couple weeks, right? There was these titanic matchups were happening all over the place. And that's actually, in D1, that's mostly because of the ACC, you know, was all the best teams in the nation playing against each other pretty much every week. Once they started conference play, it was just, you had to watch the ACC game that week. And a lot of times there were two. So you had to watch those two games. It's funny, we talked about Maryland earlier, and Maryland got a bad rap for just playing Big Ten, right? And everyone's kind of like, oh, well, Notre Dame's going to smoke Maryland, and even though Notre Dame's the sixth seed because they're the ACC team, and that's not what we saw. You know, it was close, but it's not what we saw. And I think that people need to take that under consideration when they're watching these games. It's not necessarily where you came from. It's where you are now and what you've done now.
Yeah, no question. The word on the street was the Big Ten was not nearly what the ACC was. And we saw Rutgers play, you know, North Carolina into overtime. Maryland wins in overtime, but you could have had two Big Ten teams in the championship. What I took away from the season was the New England teams got a later start than most other teams outside the Northeast. So I think that was a disadvantage for the New England teams, even the St. Anselms and obviously all the NESCAC schools. And it'd be interesting to see if the Ivy League's got a chance to play, how much different this season would be, both on the women's side and the men's side. I think you might see some different teams in the tournament, not necessarily the final four teams in the tournament, but I think that's why a lot of New England teams got a slower start and didn't get a chance to play as many games. And most of Tufts' games were, I think they had more playoff games than regular season games.
Yep.
So that, you know, it's a disadvantage. But they got to play. We got to watch some great lacrosse. And we're going to have an opportunity to watch more, which is fantastic. And I'm looking forward to watching some fall lacrosse at the college level because they're going to be back in full swing. They're going to have a full fall season. And they tend to have one or two scrimmages. And we'll get things back to normal.
Yeah. There you go. So I want to thank our staff writer, Kyle Devitt, for jumping on the podcast and lending his insight into these college lacrosse storylines and championships. You're going to read Kyle's coverage all week at laxjournal.com. He'll be in East Hartford for the championships, so follow him there. Follow his stuff on the website. Kyle, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll be right back on New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal. All right, welcome back to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal. And again, special thanks to staff writer Kyle Devitt for joining us on the podcast and offering some insight into what we might see this weekend. Kyle's got a busy week on tap, going to be writing and reporting on a lot of these issues. He'll be down in East Hartford reporting on the men's championships. And Jack, it just blows me away when, you know, we talk about these players and these teams and players who have a chance to make an impact. And it's not just, you know, players from Long Island and other lacrosse hotbeds. They're from right here in Massachusetts. They're from Lincoln Sudbury. They're from Salisbury School in Connecticut. They're from Governors. They're from Hingham. You know, it's just a nice crop of area lacrosse players and coaches that we're enjoying right now.
It just tells you how far the game has come in New England, and players are starting earlier and developing and finding a passion for the game and setting their goals high. And you know, the opportunities for New England players is endless, and we're going to be able to watch it this weekend to see these players from New England play for a national championship. It doesn't get any more exciting than that.
And these players are going to be playing in front of as many or perhaps more fans than they've ever played in before in their careers. I mean, you think back to your playing days. You played in front of full houses. You played in front of near empty houses. And what does that mean as a player to have that, you know, that level of fan support and, you know, volume in the stands as you're playing lacrosse?
I played in the Philadelphia Philadelphia Spectrum in front of 18,000 people, and I just couldn't believe 18,000 people were there to watch us play lacrosse. And it just, the excitement, the energy, there's nothing like it. It's, and the fans are so excited to watch these college players play for the players. There's, it's the ultimate lacrosse experience for these players.
College championships will be settled this weekend, but afterward, we've got another special guest from the college ranks. Joining us on the podcast next time will be Providence College coach Chris Gabrielli.
Chris played at UMass, was a standout player at UMass, and he's built a great culture at Providence College, has a lot of respect from his players and the lacrosse community, plays in a tough conference, the Big East, but has done a fabulous job building that program.
All right, for Jack Piatelli, I'm Mike Z. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy the games, and we'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal. Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.